This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, everyone. In Master Dogen's teaching on Ten Directions, he said, "Thus, only a Buddha and a Buddha in the Ten Directions admire one another, or only Buddhas alone together with Buddhas," another translation, "admire one another. To slander one another and talk about merits and shortcomings, good and bad, cannot be regarded as turning the Dharma wheel or expounding Dharma. But rather all Buddhas and Buddha children support and greet one another. In receiving the Buddha ancestors' Dharma, you study in this way, without criticizing and insulting one another, as do those parties of demons outside the way." The precepts, the teachings of our moral being, and in a sense our moral universe, are really talking about a life that is at ease and easier, infinitely easier than a life of within samsara. Samsara is difficult. It is an ongoing, difficult mode of existence. And so the great heart of compassion, to care for all beings, to not only not want to harm or injure or oppress or disregard others, but to dedicate that desire into an intention, into a commitment and vow to do just that, to live that way, because it is a way that brings us into harmony with ourselves and others, in harmony with the universe itself. It brings forth joy and well-being. And in a very simple way, it is a much, much easier mode of existence for everyone. So Dogen says, to slander one another and talk about merits and shortcomings, good and bad, cannot be regarded as turning the Dharma wheel or expounding Dharma. So the wheels by which we turn the Dharma are the wheels in which we create karma, our mind, our words, and our actions. And so here he's talking about how we use our words, our language. Trungpa Rinpoche said, "We should pay attention to our language. It should not be purely the end product of a struggle, so that our final resource is just to say, I love it or I hate it. We should not just burp out our words. As Buddha said, we should learn how to speak. We know how to make sounds, we know how to make words, but do we know how to speak? We should have some kind of self-respect for the way we speak. Having some understanding of words as we speak them is good practice. And paying attention to our state of mind as we speak goes along with that. And so right speech, as a part of the Eightfold Path, as is true for all of the Eightfold Path and all of practice, is really based in and dependent upon our moral actions, our mindfulness, and our concentration, and our insight. And so even though almost anyone who has the physical capacity to make sound and to speak can talk, what Trungpa Rinpoche is pointing to is that knowing how to speak rightfully, knowing how to speak in such a way that it brings us closer, is not something that just automatically happens. And so the Buddha spoke about right speech as part of the teaching of the 10 virtuous or non-virtuous actions. In Mahayana Buddhism, in Zen, we have the 10 grave precepts. And so these 10 wholesome or unwholesome actions are the earlier sort of expression of those moral teachings. And in the 10 wholesome and unwholesome actions, right speech is represented. So the abstinence from speaking falsely, that is to speak truthfully, the abstinence from malicious or divisive speech, slanderous speech, but rather to speak in such a way that it brings us together. To abstain from harsh or hurtful speech, speech that hurts others, but rather to speak peacefully. And then to abstain from idle chatter, sometimes it's spoken of as gossip, the other side of which is to speak meaningfully. In our precepts, in the great precepts, we have the precept to do not lie, but speak truthfully, to see their perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults, to realize self and others want, to not elevate the self and blame others, both of which, those precepts, in which there can be divisive and harsh speech. And we might think of proceeding clearly and not clouding the mind as containing idle speech. Idle speech being a way to cloud our minds. And that the karma of our speaking, you know, it was understood before the Buddha's lifetime that speech and actions created karma. But his radical insight through his enlightenment was that our very thoughts and our intentions and our desires that underlie those thoughts and intentions are also creating karma. And our karma is influenced by all of the actions around us and the things we experience, and by the individual karma of other people. All of that is working together. And so in that way, we all have a deeply mutual interest, both in the well-being of ourselves as well as others, because other people's well-being or lack of it has a direct impact on our well-being. And looking at that in terms of the speech of others as well as ourselves. And so that karma of both speaking in ways that are not right speech, maliciously, harshly, falsely, and so on, or when we speak out of right speech, that language, that when we speak in those various ways, we are creating karma that ensures pretty much that we will continue to speak that way and continue to have the impact and consequences of that language, those words. And not just words, because words themselves have meaning, but how we speak them, right? So we infuse in our language our emotions, our state of mind, our intentions, all of that is carried within the words themselves. We can have the same words and say them in many different ways that will have different impact. Bhikkhu Bodhi, in speaking about truthful speech, said, truthful speech provides in interpersonal communication, what we do with each other, between each other, a parallel to wisdom in the sphere of our inner or private understanding. The two are the commitment, inwardly and outwardly, to what is true and real. Truthful speech establishes an alignment between our own inner being and the nature of phenomena. So it's an interesting way to look at it. In a way, we could say that about virtually anything that we do that has an outward expression, that has its parallel or its basis in our inner experience, our inner understanding or lack of understanding. That they are, we are working towards bringing them into alignment, but they're not always. And so in Buddhism, speaking truthfully is considered one of the most important of all the precepts. Not just because of the harm that deception and speaking falsely does, but also because of the state of mind. With all of the precepts, it's not just about that action, that moment of action, because that moment of action has a whole path leading up to it. Mental states, emotional states, desires, intentions that may seem to arise just in that moment, or they may be a very careful and deliberate path over sometimes quite a long time that leads to a moment of action. And then, of course, there's everything that follows, the consequence of that action. So when the Buddha spoke about the paramount importance of understanding karma and practicing within that right understanding of karma, it was recognizing that that one action has a whole lifespan that goes way back before that action occurs and then has a lifespan that moves forward in a way that we may have very little control over. Malicious or divisive speech is to create enmity or doubt or suspicion, to injure the trust that we might have between ourselves, to alienate people. So to think of language that is purposefully trying to divide. And we see all of these forms of not right speech really on public display everywhere. And so from a Buddhist perspective, those are warning signs. When there's not an understanding, there's an understanding of the power of speech, which is why it's used so frequently and so ubiquitously, but not really an understanding of its deeper power. There's a sense of its power to get what I want or to have a certain impact, but very little understanding about the power of that speech that goes much deeper than that, that precedes, that is much more than just the moment of speaking words. That really has to do with creating worlds within us, between us. It's like we have all this power that virtually every person who has the capacity to speak has, but very little understanding of how powerful that power is. And malicious speech is considered particularly dangerous when it's deliberately based in falsehoods. In other words, when we're speaking to divide and create conflict or anger in others, and we're doing that by not even speaking in truthful ways. So rather, we are practicing to speak in such a way that encourages, rather than division, encourages kindness, friendship, trust, connections, honesty, which means it has to be arising from those desires to want to actually bring those things into our words, into our relationships, into the world. So it arises from our compassion and loving kindness, to want to encourage through our words people to be more trusting. So when Trungpa Rinpoche says that our language should not just be purely the end product of struggle, that is that we're in an inner struggle, and then we, as he says, we burp out these words, which are just sort of the product of that struggle, that is really what we're delivering to others. Which is than to really be devoted and to be giving energy to the thoughts and beliefs and the views that sustain and grow and give birth to those thoughts. That's what we're putting our energy into. And so on the other hand, when we're really committed to and working towards using the power of our speech in such a way to bring forth trust and compassion and honesty, patience, that's what we're devoting our energies to, right? Which means that's the consciousness that we're creating within ourselves. Harsh and hurtful speech is speech that is intended to cause harm. We're trying to hurt somebody. You know, I'm sure we've all had the experience of having something happen to us. Somebody says something, somebody does something that's hurtful, and so we either quite consciously or sometimes less so want to hurt them back to get even. And so this can include abusive speech or insulting speech, sarcasm, you know, which is kind of interesting to think about how sarcasm can be a kind of humor, but it's often a humor that is not genuinely humorous because there's something being delivered in those words that is hurtful and indirect, which is part of its, both its delivery and part of its injury. And so our speech is based in anger, aversion. And so, of course, the other side of that is compassion, loving kindness, patience, generosity. And then idle speech. You know, so those other forms of speech are pretty obvious. I mean, probably in every culture, those misuses of speech are understood, but idle speech. So the Buddha understood how powerful speech is on our consciousness and on the consciousness of others. So that when we speak in a way that sort of goes on and on, has no point, has no purpose, has no depth, is coming from distractedness and sort of generates distractedness, it's coming from negative emotions and impulses and sort of is encouraging the same, sharing our own confusion and drawing others into that, we can begin to get a sense of why the Buddha taught of this kind of caution around this misuse of speech, because it's in the realm of sort of casual conversation, right? And so I've talked about, I think for us, this doesn't mean that we, you know, shouldn't have casual conversations by any means, because casual conversations can be a way of expressing kindness, a way of bringing people together in very ordinary language. You know, those very ordinary language cannot be a means to just sort of use up time or just, be active without any particular purpose, but it can actually be very mindful and with the clear intention that I am speaking to you. We are having a conversation, even if it's a very casual conversation, over a meal, right? Where we're not talking about things of particular significance, but the conversation itself is having a positive effect. The power of our words to affect our body and mind. Words are sounds. Meaning in the words is something that we hold individually in our minds so we can explain the meaning of the words we use, but it's also something we hold together, which is why we can have a language that we share, right? But that doesn't mean that meaning, even though we may agree on certain definitions, that we hold it in the same way. Because language is experienced through our karma. So when we hear words and when we use words, that's not just coming out of a vacuum. It's coming out of our lived experience. And so in that way, we can think of not just speaking with our tongues, But we're actually speaking with our whole body and mind. Right? It's as though the sound is happening here, but actually it's our whole being that is present within those words. Our karma, our understanding. And so when we think about, you know, some of the particular factors in our life in terms of how language is used in all different kinds of ways, in media, on the internet, in advertising, in all of these modalities that can have purely commercial interests and interests often of manipulation, or sort of a blended purpose of conveying information and manipulating the listener at the same time. Or conveying manipulation as information. And so in a way, perhaps we need to become much more sophisticated in our understanding of language. Which I think is what the Buddha has been encouraging us to do. And so developing mindfulness and concentration and studying, actually examining, having a critical awareness of the language that we use and that is being used around us. And so in our working with the precepts, we understand. Wow. Okay. Well, this is going to have to be continued. Well, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to continue this. I can't just neatly wrap this up. So, to be continued. But to think about, maybe just in concluding, to think about, well, how does Dharma, our Dharma practice, when we enter into training, how do we enter into a world, an environment, and in a tradition of language? Through the sutras that we chant and that we study, through the invocations, through taking refuge, through Gatha of Atonement, through chanting the names of the Buddhas. What is that? To chant the names of the Buddhas. That in speaking the names of these enlightened beings who are endowed with different enlightened qualities, right? What is the function when we look at that from the point of view of the power of language, the power of words, right? And the place it has within our consciousness to bring forth states of consciousness, to effect change, to open us to our Buddha nature, to our more compassionate and virtuous ways of being. How does the language that we're constantly being immersed in, that we're using ourselves, we hear our own voices speaking this language, are we not in fact learning about the power of this language, right? By being given some of the most powerful language there may be in our world. From the very beginning, when we first enter into training, and perhaps the path is our opportunity to be continually stepping into that and beginning to understand and experience and benefit from and be able to then use ourselves more and more freely the power of our voice. Something to think about.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.